Orphan Black, Season 3, Episode 8 is over, but we are just getting started here on Post-Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. My name is Jessica Leese, and we've got a very exciting episode of Orphan Black to discuss and dissect and, you know, examine for proteins. And with me, as always, is the guy I would always want to take on my identity theft road trips, Mr. Mike Bloom.
You keep bringing on the compliments every episode, Jess. I feel like this is the highest one you gave me so far. I don't know how good it would be. It might be a decision you later regret when I bungle the mission for you, but I appreciate the effort nevertheless.
Well, I don't know who else I get at this point, so...
I do style of Bluetooth very well, so I could definitely play that Felix role in the whole sting of it all.
Yeah, and that was... It was really cool to see that Felix is just as good at that sort of thing as Sarah is, and you have to imagine that it's probably something they've perfected together.
Yeah, and I love it because it also, I mean, Jordan Gavaris, who plays Felix, is not British. He is Canadian. I don't know if I've just shattered anyone's minds with that, but he is not originally British. So to have him go to his what seems like his normal accent outside of the show, but to try a different accent in the show was so much fun to watch, because I'm sure the collective fan base was so like, what? Like, so mind warping. I agree, though, that it's interesting that he was able to pull these skills out when we've been led to believe the whole time that, like, Sarah is the kind of scheming one and Felix is more of like the party boy. So to have him kind of have these skills in his toolbox is a little surprising.
Yeah, I honestly, the thing that was more mind-blowing for me was not hearing him lapse into a different accent, but really lapse into a different sexuality.
Yeah, very, very true.
I don't think that up until now I would have been able to predict that he could convincingly hit on a girl. And yeah, there he is.
Did he not? I'm trying to remember, and again, for the umpteenth time I binged these all in a row, so it all kind of muddles together. Wasn't there some sort of scene where, like, he was trying to flirt with someone in order to like distract them from going into a room or something, and it didn't work?
Yeah, I think there have. He's been at the center of a lot of Three's Company style shenanigans where that sort of thing happens, but this was just a whole new level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I also love the little touches, like, about how he has to kind of, like, you know, there's obviously no makeup on his face, and as soon as he gets back in the car, he reapplies lipstick. It's just so Felix is like, all right, I'm done with that.
Yep, we gotta take off the man drag. And
did he give his real name to Crystal, though?
I don't know. I don't have it in my notes that he did, but I can't imagine that he would have.
Yeah, I couldn't either, because, you know, if she gets her identity stolen, she could be like, well, the guy looked like this and his name was Felix. And since Felix has an arrest record at this point with the police, I'm assuming it'd be pretty easy to track down.
Yeah, that's not, you know, everything else about that was so masterful, I have to imagine he would be that dumb.
It's very, very true. I also like, again, if these people that worked in the nail salon had known better, they would have been tipped off where Felix gets busted in the employee locker room and he says he was looking for the loo. And I think if someone were stopped to be like, wait a minute, you're Canadian. We don't call it Lou here.
Yeah. And the fact that he changed his accent very quickly, and she seems to be so trusting, Crystal. She, you know, people killed her monitor, and she doesn't seem to be the least bit suspicious when new strangers come in and get manicures. She just spills the whole story to them.
Yeah, let's talk about Crystal here, because Crystal was an episode that I feel like was full of a lot of fantastic things. I mean, Crystal was probably the brightest, shiniest, newest thing that we can talk about here, because she had someone that we had seen briefly in the season premiere and really didn't think about otherwise until this episode. And I also loved looking at the closer look this week, behind-the-scenes stuff, was that this character literally came out because Tatiana Maslany was fooling around with the wig on when they were filming the scene, and they're like, oh yeah, we should make a character out of that.
Yeah, well, that doesn't really surprise me. I imagine she's probably having a lot of fun coming up with, you know, new ideas for new clones all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very advantageous that in a show like this, they can say, all right, we'll bring on somebody else, because they're able to kind of use the cloning trope to justify it. You know, it's not like, oh, your crazy uncle's coming in from town to stay for the weekend. She's like, oh, yeah, there's another clone. It's very easy to justify that.
Yeah, it really is. And when we got to Tony last season, I felt like we were headed in that direction. And so it was very nice that we really have stepped off of that line of thinking pretty much all season up until this point.
Yeah, and this is definitely good Tony, right? This is the good side of that Tony device.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's at least a little bit less strange. Not to say that the idea of a transgender clone is a strange thing, just the way that it was played with the mullet wig and the making out with Felix, that was all kind of a bridge too far. Crystal, I feel like there is room for there to be kind of a less, you know, kind of a less gritty Sarah, not particularly book smart, maybe a little more street smart. And she's got, like, there's elements of Allison I could see in her face. Like, she was a little bit, you know, she had that same smirk.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's moments where her speech pattern sounded like Cosima. Like, there's a little bit of every clone in her.
Yeah. And I think going back to the whole Tony comparison, I think one of the reasons why I enjoy Crystal more than Tony is that Tony came in for one episode and left. He really had no sort of impact on the main storyline. It was a B plot in one episode of season two where basically Felix had to kind of keep him in the apartment and he ended up failing to do so. Whereas Crystal, even though maybe this is the last we'll see of her because of the ending of this episode, she played such a pivotal role into the main theme because she was part of Rachel's, you know, bargaining chip to say, I want her identity and I want to leave. So she kind of got brought into the A story. And it also brought some nice moments for Felix as well. And again, Felix was very, very silent in the he was very under the radar for the first half of this season. But between like this week, last week, 2 weeks ago, when he like confronted Rachel very violently, I got a lot of good Felix stuff here. And I loved when he kind of relented after Crystal really shows this soft side of her, and she talks about how, like, I can't really trust anyone anymore. And you can tell Felix is, like, looking at her and definitely seeing his sister in her. And so that's when he kind of relents, goes into his real accent, which confuses the hell out of her, and says, you know, you're a survivor, you're not alone, and then just sort of leaves that message and leaves. Though she is a survivor, so to say, but maybe not in the best form right now.
Yeah. Yeah, although I thought it was interesting. I might have to go back and watch again and do a little pausing on her diary of notes.
Yes, it doesn't seem like the typical dream journal. I mean, this is like complete with a composite sketch of Rudy's face.
Yeah, she badly wants to know what's going on, and I don't know how long it would have taken her to figure it out, but it's really, like, clearly since she's talking about it to every single person that comes into the nail salon, she's having, you know, she's processing it. She's starting to figure things out.
Yeah, and that is really funny. I wonder if there are, like, typical customers at the nail salon. I was like, okay, I don't want to get Crystal today because, you know, she's going to tell me about that weird story where the twins came in and killed her boyfriend. So I'm just going to go to Marlene. Marlene, are you available for an appointment today?
Yeah, that is absolutely how that goes. And I think her newfound fear of clowns and twins is pretty amazing.
Like, yeah, is this the only time I think I've heard of someone saying they have a fear of twins?
Well, I don't know if that was something that she was afraid of before, but I would imagine if I had Rudy and Seth pulling the, like, surprise threesome on me, I might be afraid of twins too.
So would it get to the extent of, like, you're walking down the street and you see, like, a mother with a set of, you know, two babies in the stroller, you just scream and run away?
Yeah, like, that's unnatural. Ah.
Burn one of them.
Yeah, or in the novel, The Poisonwood Bible, they are in the, what's now the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in the middle of nowhere, and two of the girls in this family are twins, and they say, you know how we deal with twins around here? If someone has twins, we leave them out in the woods.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's the Barbara Kingsolver book,
yeah,
right?
It's a fantastic book.
I read the wrong Barbara Kingsolver book. For school, I had to read, I think it's called, like, The Bean Trees.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically the Poisonwood. I think from what I hear, it's like the B movie version of the Poisonwood Bible. It's like almost the exact same plot, but it's not as good.
Yeah, no, Poisonwood Bible is excellent. Highly recommended.
All right, I'll have to add that to my summer reading list.
It's a very, very inspiring and non-scary twins.
That's good. What about any clowns in the Poisonwood Bible?
No clowns whatsoever.
That's good. I wonder what Crystal's clown phobia stems from, if the twin phobia stems from what happened with Seth and Rudy.
Well, I think that's a very common thing of people of the millennial generation. I feel like everyone's afraid of clowns.
Yeah, Rob Cesternino was afraid of clowns.
He certainly is. And I mean, I was for a while after I saw Killer Clowns from Outer Space, but you know, a normal clown doesn't typically bother me.
Yeah, I was at least I was perturbed by clowns for a little bit when I was reading through It, but then It gave me more fears that kind of washed away the fear of clowns. Now I'm afraid of many different odder things than just clowns after reading It.
Yeah, the takeaway from It is that clowns are scary, but not the scariest thing in the world. Like,
no!
Did you keep a wide berth around storm drains for a very, very long time?
Storm drains. There's also a part of It, the book, when I sort of like when I would stand amongst my friend group and kind of look around and be like, oh, there's a situation that I might find myself in like they did in It. And I don't know if I'd want to go down that path.
Yeah. Time to find new friends just in case that ever happens.
Yes. Very true. Hopefully they have as good porn star names as, what was it, like Muffin Slowakowski?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see the wheels turning in Felix's head. Like, how the hell do I spell that?
Yeah, though I love then using that as like a way to get, you know, the security questions for bank accounts or anything like that. That's such like a nice, for someone like Crystal, that's a nice surreptitious way of getting all their personal information.
Yeah, and you know, everyone out there, I think we all learned a lesson about protecting your identity.
Yeah, always go with what hospital you were born in.
Yeah, whenever someone brings up the porn star name in the first 10 minutes of conversation, they may have ulterior motives.
Yeah, in more ways than one. It's never good. It's never good either way. Either someone's trying to steal your identity or they're trying to use you for another reason.
They're trying to recruit you into the adult film industry.
Yeah, though I hope someone has taken Crystal's initial name, which is this bitch mistress of Camelot.
Yeah, I like that she's thought about that. Like, she's clearly given that one serious thought.
I just like the term bitch mistress. Like, it's sort of like a position held in the kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that seems like, you know, that's one of those points where she seemed oddly Allison-esque.
Yes, very much so. I feel like this would be a really weird, like, medieval-esque porn, but still starring Robert Goulet.
Robert Goulet should never do porn.
Never say never.
I think he needs to stick to singing.
Why not both? Why doesn't he sing the soundtrack?
Yeah, he could just contribute a couple of songs, like the one for the end credits.
Just an inspirational song sung by Robert Goulet.
Yes.
All right. I'll be game. I'll go that far.
All right, mark it.
Great. We're not suggesting TV shows this episode. We're suggesting how Robert Goulet can break into the adult film industry this episode.
Yep. Well, you know, we gotta keep stepping up our creative game here. You know, people will get bored. You know, people don't necessarily come here to listen to us talk about Orphan Black.
I certainly hope not at this point, or else they would have definitely tuned out by now.
Yeah, I mean, no judgment if you did, guys. Seriously. Yes,
very much so. Speaking of judgment, what do we think about the contents inside of Crystal's purse, aside from the obvious dream notebook?
Hey, I'm not judging what anybody has in their personal effects.
In your purse that you take on the go. And I mean, again, I don't know how much I want to cast judgment here, because I'm sure people do it, but like, is that a thing that you really need to have with you?
Hey, you never know.
I guess that's true. If she thinks you're going to be brought into the adult film industry at any point in time, maybe she wants. Maybe that's like her, you know, it's like the equivalent of her like headshot and resume.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, she had this really weird, disturbing, scary thing happen to her, and her boyfriend/monitor was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
She may feel like she needs to flee at any given moment. And so it's like when someone asks you, what are the things you want to take out of your house? If your house is on fire, you have 3 seconds, figure it out. Maybe she just has all that stuff with her in case she needs to flee.
Is this the equivalent of like one of her desert island items?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I think going by that logic, I guess it makes sense. Though, again, with the fate she is befitted at the end of this episode, I don't think that will come to use anytime soon.
Well, maybe she should have thought of it a little bit sooner.
Yeah, very, very true. Do you remember what's the name of this creepy, like, shaggy-haired doctor?
That's Dr. Nealon.
Dr. Nealon, okay. As opposed to Dr. Leakey, we now have Dr. Nealon.
Yep.
And he was the one that was just sort of hanging out, and they pulled the whole switcheroo here with now in a very frightening prospect for poor Crystal that she's going to be purposely placed under a coma and have an eye removed.
Yeah, I don't think they took her eye. Like, this is something that I made a note for because I thought so immediately. And then I've been kind of combing through internet reactions to this. And apparently Crystal has both of her eyes still. And they just kind of stuck a patch over one of them so that she looks like Rachel. Like, they show them kind of bandaging a clone that I assume is Crystal and, like, putting a bandage over her eye, but they don't ever... She doesn't ever remove the eye. I think what they did is... I think they gave Rachel some sort of synthetic eye.
Yeah.
And she's very weirdly concerned about all of her Sestras on her way out. Like, you would think that Rachel's just like, yeah, screw all these people. You know, whatever happens to them, happens to them. I'm going to Taiwan. Peace out. But she says to Dr. Nealon, she explicitly makes him promise that he's not going to harm any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's going to take care of Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a, like, yeah, take care of her kind of way.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's a little bit of a, for lack of a better term, hole that needs to be patched up with not taking out the eye. Because, you know, what if Delphine walks in to check up on Rachel and decides, oh, I'm going to change the dressing on her eye. Oh, wait, she has two eyes. That means Rachel tricked us and now she's gone.
Yeah, well, you know that is, you know, that's Chekhov's eyeball waiting to come back at us. Because I don't think Delphine would necessarily go in to change the dressing, but I think she might feel like, oh, I'm going to push on the eye a little bit like it did before, just to see what happens. And then she's going to find out, oh, she's not flinching at all and she's not in pain. That's weird.
Yeah, it's a scientific method. Let's see what happens when I push on a coma patient's eyeball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree. I that may come up later because I feel like they're going to figure out that Rachel is gone sooner rather than later, right?
Yeah, they must be able to figure it out. But, you know, how much time do you really need? You need like 2 days to get to Taiwan. And then what are they going to do about that?
Now, this is another thing that I was trying to look at through internet forums as well. Is Rachel going to Taiwan, or do you think she's going to try to go to London to find the original caster?
She might be going to London. Seems like everybody's headed there in the next episode, and, you know, it would make sense that she would tell them she's going one place and then go an entirely other place. But if that's the case, then why did she decode that one particular line? Like, yeah. Why would she say that's what it says? If I'm decoding the pages, I'm going to be like, you know, the original caster clone is in London, Ontario.
Yeah.
I'd be making stuff up just to, like, throw them off the scent. And she didn't appear to be doing that.
That's very true. I don't know. I feel like she has so much unfinished business with her father and her family that I feel like going after this original caster would maybe in her warped brain be the thing that would help her kind of find peace with her father's death?
Yeah, it might be. She seems like she's still kind of wrecked by that.
Yeah, which, I mean, makes sense. He did purposely kill himself in front of her so that she wouldn't get any more information out of him. So that's pretty traumatizing. And then it was all downhill from there after that. But, I mean, I would not be surprised, because if she did go to Taiwan, I feel like we wouldn't see her anymore in the series. But I feel like she still has some story that we can wring out of her.
Are you saying that going to Taiwan is kind of like going to Belize?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't think they're going to be, I don't think Orphan Black might draw the line with filming on location in London. I don't think they're going to be like, well, we're going to Taiwan next season. It's going to be all in Taiwan.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be downtown Toronto with a couple of signs thrown up.
Yes.
Welcome to Taiwan.
Taiwanese food.
Yeah. It's the Taiwanese CN Tower.
Yeah, I wonder if going to London next episode is like the equivalent of those TGIF sitcoms going to Disney World.
Yeah. I think it's like, you know, one of them is going to find the cursed tiki idol.
Yep.
One of them is going to hit the jackpot on slot machine.
Yeah, and Mrs. S singing next episode is the equivalent of Uncle Jesse performing with the Rippers at the Magic Kingdom.
Absolutely. That's pretty much the only reason that's in there.
Yeah.
Although, apparently she was pretty amazing in the commitments, and so this is her opportunity to kind of call back to that.
That's fantastic, and I'm excited to see Felix and Sarah and Mrs. S in London in general, because, you know, Felix says we're going home, so it'll be interesting. Maybe we'll get some more London-based characters when we get there that know them, or maybe there'll be something about them connecting with the culture, and maybe we'll go back to these inherent themes of, like, family and what home is, so... I'm excited to leave Canada for a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm particularly excited for that montage that they're going to set to London Calling, where they're all trying on goofy outfits in Carnaby Street, because you know that's going to happen.
Yeah, and then there's going to be a shot of, like, a Bobby chasing them from right to left, and then it's going to have the Bobby chasing them from left to right.
Yep, they're going to be... You know, they're going to visit Buckingham Palace, and they're going to see the changing of the guard, and they're going to, like, start poking at the guards to try to get them to change their facial expression.
I want the original Caster clone to be Queen Elizabeth.
That would be amazing.
It's the Queen?
Well, you know, it makes sense, because, you know, they want to make sure they got a spare around if something happens to her.
Yeah, I just think that would be really funny, because it leads again to this, like, sitcom-esque trope where they're like, all right, we have to get to the Queen somehow.
Yep, that'd be pretty fabulous. So we have a clue to the original now, and I'm surprised that nobody picked up on this, that they just kind of, one of the things they decode is the original has a number, and then it's one of the serial numbers that we already knew people have in their genome.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes completely uncommented on. Is it because this is something that would only make sense to Cosima, or were they just more interested in London because it gives them an excuse to travel?
I think it's the former. I mean, these are not the science kids. These are more of the jocks. So when they get that, I think I don't even know if they're going to. They'll probably, I would say they would tip it off to Cosima before they leave, but I mean, considering where Cosima ends this episode, she won't have the resources to do it whatsoever, since she just left Dyad.
Yeah, that's kind of an inconvenient time to lose access to all your research.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know what they're going to do then, too. Are they going to, like, try to walk around searching for, like, a barcode on anybody that kind of looks like a Caster clone?
Yeah, I don't even know how that works, but I imagine Cosima must have backed some things up from her time there, especially since she's doing research on herself.
Yeah.
She sequenced her own genome, and she found that line of binary codes. She knows what to look for if she can get samples out of a Caster clone.
Yeah, and I wonder, and we'll obviously talk a lot more about Cosima, because this was a very Cosima-heavy episode, too. I wonder what her next plan is. Do you think she's going to go with them to London, or do you think she's just going to hang out and her storyline is going to be more about her confronting Shay?
I think we got to keep her there so we could find out what Shay is really all about, because this is just like, as soon as you see Delphine slap that dossier on the desk, I'm just like, oh, geez, Cosima, you did it again.
Yeah, but I also want to say Orphan Black Writers, you did it again, because we've talked about this before, but I don't necessarily like if the show is going to a place where, like, every new character you meet is a spy. You know, I just want, can there just be, like, a normal person who just doesn't have any sort of ulterior motive? He just wants to hang out with these people.
Yeah, he just got sucked into a really strange situation. But I guess Scott kind of serves that role.
For now, who knows? Now.
Yeah, maybe Scott's a spy. And you can see, like, the camera kind of lingers on him in a way that's like, ooh, maybe he's the one in Mole. And nope, it's not. It's the random girl that, you know, Cosima goes on her first Tinder date ever, and it turns out to be true love. Gee, I wonder, there's nothing sketchy about that. Nothing whatsoever.
Yeah, and that has to be one of those things that's so meticulously planned. You know, you can't just say, okay, you're going to become, like with Delphine, it was very much like, okay, express the same interest with her and then sort of become friends. And then the romance developed as sort of, a corollary to that. With Shay, her direct mission was, you need to make this girl fall in love with you so that she can trust you. And that is a much, much harder mission, in my opinion.
I don't know. She's vulnerable. She's on the rebound. And they presumably know, you know, she's into blondes. She wants to talk about sciencey things with someone who, like, has peripheral knowledge of science. That might be all it needs. That might be all they need to get her into bed, at least.
So do you think, I'm assuming, you know, we'll find out a lot more about Shay next week. Do you think Shay really has this sort of, like, metaphysical hippy-dippy mindset, or do you think she was just playing that up?
That is hard to tell. I would have guessed that that might be an occupation that she would throw at Cosima because Cosima would not care. But It seemed like she was doing some sort of Reiki-esque thing this episode.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that there's probably some truth to it, or at least she read a book before she embarked on this seduction mission.
Then she was spouting all that BS about, like, well, I feel like a near-death experience is the thing you love most, and that brings you back to life. So, like, I don't know. She'd have to do a lot. She's really playing method there if she's really a buttoned-up type of person.
Yeah. Maybe she was military and she's rebelled from it. You know, maybe she's like female Paul.
Yeah, that's very true. And I feel like female Paul, she could only go out like Paul to redeem herself in my eyes, because I'm not a Shay fan.
Yeah, me either. She's kind of irritating. And just like, oh, you're new Delphine. You're the person that Cosima's going to trust too much. And, you know, she's like the Yoko of the Clone Club.
Yeah, and I mean, she serves as more of a plot device and a character, I think, at this point, and especially due to the fact that now she's been revealed as a spy and all of her characteristics are possibly out the window now. It's being just played up. It's sort of like, all right, well, this thing happened, but I have to say I really enjoyed the Cosima and Delphine scenes this episode. So if Shay had to drive the two of them into these scenes this episode, I guess all the power to her.
Yeah, I mean, people that were on that ship are, you know, back on that ship flying the flag.
Yeah, though I'll say that I think some of my, probably one of my more favorite scenes between them this episode was not one that was more romantically charged. It was just the two of them were kind of just talking to each other as friends, or as people, really. And I think I think it's a scene right before Scott calls them to talk about what happened with the island of Dr. Moreau, when they're just talking about, like, you are sick, you need to get Kira to give you more stem cells. No, I can't do that. Like, I think when it's less romantically charged and you realize that they're, again, these are people that had an initial bond over their shared love of science, I think it makes things that much richer in terms of the characters.
Yeah, and it's nice that it's not bogged down by the romantic drama that tends to bog down Cosima's story in general.
Yeah, though there was that lingering thing where they held hands for like a second.
Ooh.
Yeah, who knows what could have happened if Scott didn't call at that exact moment.
Yeah, Scott is such a buzzkill.
Poor Scott. We found out this is a pretty big Scott episode too. We got to see inside his apartment.
Yeah. Now, is it just me, or does he have kind of a Gail Bedecker apartment?
Yeah, I would say if Gail Bedecker was into, like, WoW and had those, like, multiple monitors displayed on his desk, it was very similar.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, just sort of, you know, a big wall of sci-fi, and he's got a cat, and
it's... Yeah, it's very, like, dusty. I'm assuming there's some sort of tape in there of Scott singing karaoke with an ascot on.
Yeah, oh, you know that's in there.
Yeah, so, but I don't know if there's Asian subtitles.
Maybe not Asian subtitles.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was fun to see both inside there. We got some of his gaming buddies to help out in this big, like, Ocean's 11-esque scheme. So this has been a good Scott episode, I would say.
Yeah, and Scott, you know, I generally enjoy Scott. I enjoy what he brings to the program, because he would be a random nameless red shirt in any other program. But here we know a lot about him, and he's been able to contribute.
Yeah, very much so. And you even get awkward Scott moments in the beginning when, you know, Cosima finally brings Shay into the lab and Scott decides to break the ice by saying, oh, I love lesbians.
Yeah.
Or can I sequence your genome?
Yeah, he's a lovable nerd.
Absolutely. But that being said, I mean, of course, it sucks that he is the one that had to get hit with, you know, Rudy threatening him. At least I was scared that something would have, like, happened to Scott. Not got killed, but, like, probably harmed or hurt in any sort of way. So I'm happy that Rudy just kind of you know, threatened him and then sort of let him go.
Yeah. Yeah. I was worried for the cat, honestly.
Yeah. Denise, specifically with her feline asthma, I think, I don't know if Denise would have had an attack amidst all the chaos going on.
Yeah. I don't know if I was a cat and I was being threatened by that creepy dude with the scar. Yeah. I might need to reach for my kitty inhaler.
Yeah. Breeds of cats and scars do not go well together.
Nope. He looked a little bit like Dr. Evil when we first got that glimpse of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Rudy could kind of pass for a Dr. Evil that actually is good at his job.
Yeah, you know, shave his head and slap a Nehru jacket on him. And, you know, they can cast him in the next low-budget Austin Powers sequel.
Yeah, and tell him to, you seem to keep telling Virginia to throw you a freaking bone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, when Virginia talks to that guy in the cantina about how Rudy's out in the field, I thought it was just meant that he was, you know, he was just out and about in his little Mexican Jeep, just sort of patrolling, seeing what was going on. But no, it's apparently out in the field means, okay, now that we've escaped death, now you have to go use this information the spy gave us and go get this book.
Okay, can we please talk about this? Because I was fuming when I saw this. It's like, okay, so Paul gets one of these, like, chef from South Park deaths where he's stabbed and shot and he grenades everybody. And he doesn't even get the satisfaction of having, like, killed anybody through this. You get Virginia Cody, like, strolls into the cantina looking like she, you know, she was on the wrong end of a Wile E. Coyote TNT explosion.
Yeah, if this scene was at all realistic, you know, every time the guy would talk to Virginia Cody, she would just respond with, "What?"
Yeah.
Because even if she had, you know, escaped unharmed, that blast was so close to her that I'm assuming her eardrums would have, like, exploded from the impact.
Yeah, yeah. And you got Sarah, who's, like, underground, probably several hundred yards away. She gets injured. How is Virginia Cody, like, walking around and talking and not, you know, barely a scratch on her? And for that matter, how is Rudy look completely normal? And he's got a scar on his face. He doesn't have any new ones, though.
Well, as I remember, Jess, Rudy was a good 6 inches in front of Dr. Virginia Cody. And we know that makes all the difference between a slightly broken arm and remaining completely unharmed after a grenade explosion.
Well, I'm going to remember that the next time someone throws a grenade at me.
Don't worry, I'm like Virginia Cody.
Yeah, maybe she's got the super healing thing that Kira has, but that is the only excuse for that. Like, she just shows up looking a little bit singed. That's not okay.
And to add insult to injury, I feel like even if, you know, he blew up all the castor research and that little baby skeleton, Virginia's still able to work because she still has that spy. So it's not like, oh, yeah, mission completely failed. She's able to say, oh, well, that plan A doesn't work. Let's just go to plan B, which must be Paul is probably looking down and being like, ah, damn it.
Yep. He's sitting there in, like, Paul heaven and he is, you know, it's all been for nothing.
Yeah, well, at least he has Beth now.
Yeah, they're reunited and it feels so good.
Could you imagine, though, the conversation that, like, well, I have to explain a lot to you, Beth. Here's the thing. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry I banged your clone.
And sorry that I led you to love me and I couldn't love you back and it led you to kill yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sorry that I was taking samples of you and sending them off to a scary laboratory.
But then he'd also have to confront that guy from the creepy guy from the first season. Like, sorry, I cut off your vestigial tail.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that guy's not in heaven.
Yeah. he's in a different place. Probably in purgatory.
Yeah, he's definitely in purgatory. He's got to work to grow that tail back.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe he's, like, sent back to Earth, like, as an angel, and he has to accomplish, like, 5 good deeds for his tail to grow back.
This is a great idea. I hope they're taking notes over at BBC America so that we can get some good Orphan Black spinoffs here.
Yeah, they could do, you know, back in the day when those, like, little mini web series were popular, like what they were doing with The Office and Lost and Heroes, I think they could totally do it.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I would watch that.
Yeah, so who do we reckon this guy was that Virginia was talking to?
We've seen him before, I feel like. But I was racking my brain. I'm like, I feel like I should know this guy's name. He seems like someone that we've seen before who probably has a name, and he's going to be the main bad guy of next season or something, and then we will kick ourselves that we didn't notice him sooner.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's from, I'm assuming he's from higher up than Virginia, since he seems to allude to the fact that he knows that there are, like, I guess there are more than two strains, which I guess opens up an entire Pandora's box. And maybe Pandora will be the name of the next, you know, strain of clones we'll get, where we could have strains of clones just coming and going throughout. This is not just a two-tiered process.
Yeah, well, wasn't in Greek mythology, weren't there like two sets of twins born at the same time?
Oh, I don't know about that. I have to think about my Greek mythology.
Yeah, I gotta look that up because I'm not totally well versed on it. But yeah, next season we're gonna get like there's gonna be clones, and they're gonna be like a there's gonna be a third set of clones, and they're gonna look totally different. Like they're gonna have a you know a set of ginger clones, and then the next season we're gonna have a set of Native American clones. And pretty soon we're going to have, like, the Captain Planet and the Planeteers, but everybody is a clone.
I wonder, yeah, like, I guess that would be, you know, BBC America / Space's solution to sort of viewer feedback. Of like, okay, they want more diversity on the show. Okay, let's make this next set of clones, I don't know, Laotian.
Yeah, you know, it's ironic that you would have to address diversity in a show about clones.
Well, yeah, that's probably one of their unfortunate problems. Like, damn it, all right, they're all the same white woman. What are we gonna? How are we gonna solve this? I don't know. One of them is a guy now.
Yeah, one of them can be blonde.
Yeah, that's diversity.
Yeah, she'll have different accents, and you know, one of them was raised by wolves.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what Virginia found out this episode is important. But I feel like it'll only come to fruition in, like, the season finale. Specifically, since we're spending so much time in London next week, I don't think that Virginia Coey is really going to become a big part of the rest of the season.
No, no, she's going to be plotting in the wings and ready to come back with a vengeance for season four.
Yeah, so we talked before about how we thought maybe the Caster clones, the Caster project is now sort of, you know, on the back burner. Do we still think so, or do we count pursuing the original Caster clone as bringing it back to the forefront?
I think it seems like there's always a MacGuffin with these Caster people.
Yeah, we gotta find the baby skeleton. We have to find the original Caster.
Yeah, they're gonna find something else. Oh no, this guy's not really the original. We gotta find some other guy. And it's gonna go on and on and on. Like, this is like a puzzle with infinity pieces.
Oh man, that would be, as someone who likes to de-stress using jigsaw puzzles, that would be both the best and worst thing. That would be another purgatory thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have jigsaw puzzles in my house because it tends to aggravate our insomnia. Like, one of us will just get up at 3 a.m. and sit at the puzzle for a while. And
My parents' house, they do the jigsaw puzzles to sort of, you know, decompress or prevent any sort of anxiety. But the problem is that they do it in the living room, which has no lighting. There's, like, one little light in the corner. So it's like, the worst thing because basically anytime after sunset, you can't do it at all.
Yeah, that's...
Which I guess is a way to prevent insomnia, too, because you're like, oh, well, I can't do this anymore, so I can't stay up all night doing this, so I guess I'll go to bed.
Yeah, we're losing light. Time to put the puzzle away.
Yeah, maybe that's a good solution for any sort of habit. Just make it daylight-focused.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the best cure for insomnia.
Yes.
Unless you live in Iceland.
So did she make, like, solar-powered cigarettes, then?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the sun set, so I can't smoke anymore.
Guess I'll just go to bed.
Man, we're getting real creative, this podcast.
Yeah, this isn't just Orphan Black recap, this is Think Tank.
We're changing the world.
Yeah,
wow. Much like Virginia Coey with, you know, making people sterile.
You know, I think I would put better money on any of our plans to achieve world peace than any of Virginia Coey's. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, it's sort of like, I think this was brought up actually earlier in the week on the Game of Thrones feedback show. I mean, Watchmen, it's sort of, spoiler alert for Watchmen, it sort of ends around this whole idea of like, well, let's make this big nuclear holocaust happen so that it unifies humanity around this core idea and there's no sort of conflicts beneath it. So maybe Virginia Coey creates a common enemy by saying, well, let's take out that crazy lady who's trying to make us all sterile. It'll bring about world peace as a side effect.
Yeah, like maybe she is the nuclear holocaust we all need. Not necessarily the one we deserve.
You know, I think that's on her business card, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Virginia Coey, you know, rogue doctor / nuclear holocaust we all need.
Yeah, it has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed to find that she was barely scratched by this grenade blast that managed to destroy all of the caster research and Paul, but not anybody that really should have been destroyed by this. And I'm especially going to be annoyed if it turns out that it destroyed Mark, who was way further away.
Mark just gets hit by a piece of debris.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not good. That's not okay.
No, I'm assuming he's alive. Because I think we talked about this. I'm pretty sure Paul told him to, like, get out of there when, after he'd kind of, you know, subdued everyone, kind of took over the compound before Rudy came back. But yeah. I have no idea where Mark is going to go. You know, if he wasn't in this mystical cantina, which apparently is the place to go once you're outside of the caster compound. I'm not sure where he went.
Yeah, does anybody actually hang out in that cantina if they're not, like, escaping the caster compound?
Oh, those poker players seem like they're sort of regulars.
Yeah, those guys might not ever leave.
Yeah, did you like the return of our mystical bartender this week?
Yeah, I was excited to see her again, and I was excited to see that she is solidly on Team Clone.
Yeah, that's exciting. You would think that, again, when you're led to believe that every character is going to betray the clones at some point, it's nice to see a new character be like, you know what, I didn't see any twins.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother helping you. You seem shady.
Yes, and I will not let you use my shower in the back.
Yeah, showers are for winners, lady.
Yeah, exactly. Go get out of here with your bald man.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet she didn't even teach him the Spanish word for food either.
Nope, probably not.
Nope, no tacos for you. Get out.
Is she allowed to do that? She deprive someone with a food just because she thinks they might be evil?
Hey, you know, businesses, I don't know about Mexico, but businesses in the United States reserve the right to refuse service to anyone.
That's true. That might be the next Arizona law.
Yep. Shady clone people, no tacos for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, so we find out there's more than two factions, and we will find out eventually, I'm sure. Once we get bored, there's going to be another clone faction. We might even just reveal some new, like, field of clone troopers at the end of episode 10. It's happened before.
That's very true. I thought you meant episode 10 of Star Wars.
Yeah, that too.
Just, like, one of the stormtroopers takes off her helmet, it turns out to be Tatiana Maslany.
You know, she was up for a role in Star Wars. And I really? Yeah, she was supposed to be the lead in one of the upcoming Star Wars spinoff movies, and they cast somebody else, and I'm pretty disappointed about that, because that would have been amazing.
Oh, so not like the Daisy Ridley role?
No, it was, it's in the, I think it's called Star Wars Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
She was up for a role in that, and it went to Felicity Jones.
Oh.
So. Man,
that stinks. I think she's been in, like, only a couple of projects outside of Orphan Black, but still, she's one of those actresses that, like, I'd be excited to see do other stuff.
Yeah, I liked her very much. I caught the Parks and Recreation episodes she did well after I had begun watching Orphan Black, and I was freaked out.
Yeah, she's really fun in Parks and Rec, mainly because not to talk too much on Parks and Rec, but I feel like a lot of those auxiliary characters are meant to kind of play dumb, much like a lot of characters on The Simpsons, but this is one that actually kind of verbally sparred with Tom Haverford and was kind of sarcastic and dry, and it sucks that she couldn't have been brought on for more stuff, and that, you know, spoiler alert for Parks and Recreation, that they had to kind of bust in Lucy again to be like, and this is going to be Tom's love interest. I feel like it would have been a much more satisfying ending if he had gone with Tatiana Maslany.
Yeah, I would ship that. And I also enjoy seeing her in other things because I just like to believe that means that Parks and Recreation is in the same canon with Orphan Black now. Like, we can just believe that she's a clone.
Yes, you know, whoever came up with the Pixar theory out there, start working on the Orphan Black Parks and Rec theory.
This all ties into the Westfall theory somehow.
Yeah, it's very true. Well, I mean, Orphan Black does take place in Canada, so, you know, any shows that take place in America can say it by being like, well, America doesn't care about Canada, so they're not really going to hear about any of this clone stuff going on.
Yeah, really, we've only met, I think we've only met, like, three American clones, so we don't really care about them by and large.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, and I just enjoy, like, being able to, every time Tatiana Maslany has a role somewhere else, I'm just going to assume it's another clone and fold it into the universe.
I think I'd just keep building that theory book up for your dissertation.
Yep. I'm going to get a doctorate in Orphan Black studies.
I've seen weirder doctorates at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's jump around here. Let's go over to Allison Land.
Flash Helena land a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and we only get like two scenes here, but they're very, very good scenes in both cases. And once again, I think one of the people on the writing staff, I think they must have hired somebody new for this season that really, really liked the idea of Donnie Hendrix and has given him all of the amazing lines.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Yeah, I wonder. Maybe what's his name? Kristen Bruhn, I think, is the actor who plays Donnie. Maybe he became like an executive producer, and so he'll just walk into the writers' room and he's like, "So what's Donnie doing this week?" We thought maybe Donnie has to take Helena in. Great, that's great. And can Donnie start a fight too? Yeah, I want to see Donnie do that this week.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe he's got naked photos of somebody on the production staff.
Yeah, or all of them.
Or all of them. Like,
I saw you did Robert Goulet porn.
Yeah, yeah. He's saw the Robert Goulet film and had all these people that produced Orphan Black, and now he gets to be
so weird.
He gets to be the secret badass of the Orphan Black universe.
Now I want to imagine like the creators of Orphan Black made the Robert Goulet adult film and said like, let's work on the show. We'll just use all the same production crew.
Well, that's how they raised the money. You know, it was scrappy. It was like the Canadian version of Calendar Girls.
But I mean,
the Full Monty. They made an adult film to finance this scrappy little television show that they wanted to make for BBC America / Space.
Oh my God, the true story of Orphan Black when they had to create Robert Goulet adult films in order to subsidize them.
Somebody call the Lifetime Network. I think we got our next unauthorized story.
Very unauthorized.
Fan fiction.
Yeah. So, yeah. What were we talking about? Oh, Donnie. Donnie had a big episode. Like, this is a big episode for like Donnie and Scott. These like sort of schlubby tertiary characters got a lot to do this episode.
Hashtag schlub life.
Hashtag schlub life. He's really living up to the name here, even though he ends, you know, being knocked out on the floor of bubbles.
Yeah, I would still term this all a win for Donnie. I particularly like the way that he and Helena played off of each other. Like, I didn't know how that was going to go, and you could tell he's really discomforted by having these two very, very weird girls in the clone circle get folded into his household. But, you know, put Helena in the back room and have her make soap, and he's going to show her how to do it, and they have this weirdly tender moment. And I don't know if Helena was flirting with him or what that was, but it was very strange and very awesome.
I don't think Helena flirts in general. I think that's one of the consequences of her growing up in a convent and being trained to be a mindless assassin. Even when she was flirting with her boyfriend that she talks about in season two, like, she wasn't really flirting. I think she was just sort of being herself. I do find some fault here with, like, I think Donnie understandably is like, no, we're not going to take her into our house. And Felix is like, it's your turn. Like, I didn't know there was a chore wheel for taking people into their houses.
Yeah. Yeah. And I especially enjoyed Felix's like half-ass attempt to blackmail them. And Allison's response, there's no need to blackmail.
Yeah. Allison was firmly on his side. It was just having to convince Donnie. And again, while hilarity ensued, I do kind of feel Donnie here of like, so I have to take the killing machine into my house, and I also have to take the brainwashed cult member into my house as well.
Yeah, that is a very full house indeed.
It's the weirdest full house. This should be the unauthorized full house story.
Yeah, yeah. I do like that Helena and Gracie have made up.
Yeah, that was a cool thing that I'm happy we got to revisit, because you remember when they see each other, like, I think everyone had the same instantaneous memory of like, oh right, the last time they saw each other was when Helena escaped the compound and burned everything down to the ground.
Yeah, yeah. And so they could have been much more angry at each other.
Yeah, and I think this goes to show the change that's erupted between the two characters. I mean, this is a Helena that was able to escape the Castor compound but went back for her sister, and this is the Gracie who has now had her sort of rumspringa and has sort of opens her eyes to the world around her and has become a little bit more down to earth. So the fact that they were able to like apologize to each other, and Helena hugged her and said she was going to be her auntie to her babies, who I think she thinks that are in that like tank of that silver tank of nitrogen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they are apparently in there.
But didn't they know? Didn't the casters think she was pregnant at the compound?
Well, she is pregnant. She's got one inside her and a bunch in the can.
Oh, okay. Now again. season two is kind of a blur to me, I'll be honest here, Jess.
Yeah. Yeah, because she takes that canister as soon as she comes back. As soon as she comes back for Clone Club Dance Party, she's lugging that canister.
Yeah, okay.
It's like she wants all of her babies so that they don't get, like, repurposed to the cult.
Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming once they got out of the cantina, they sort of swung by the apartment, grabbed the babies, and went to Allison's?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think, like, pack your things, Lena, and her things are basically a canister.
Yeah. So I like when any character interacts with Allison's children, because you would think Allison's children were, like, very prim and proper, much like Allison herself, but, like, they're totally up for it. Like, in one of the early episodes when Felix makes her son, like, become a drag queen, and in this episode when, you know, Helena's talking to her daughter about the eggs that she has in a big tank of silver tank of nitrogen.
Yeah, I think they must be delighted with this new turn. Like, Mommy was probably pretty boring up until this point, and now she's got all these strange new friends. It's got to be really exciting for Gemma and whatever the other one's name is.
Either that or they're going to be so psychologically damaged coming out of this, and they're going to try to explain what happened to their to any sort of therapist when they get older, and they're going to be committed immediately.
Yeah, my mom had all these friends that looked just like her. It was really strange.
And there were men with guns outside, and Mom and Dad dragged the body into the garage and buried it.
And then all of a sudden they started making soap and putting pills underneath the soap.
And then there was this guy that kind of had a hair like Daryl Dixon that was flirting with my mom.
It was a very strange time in my life.
Well, wait, why are you putting that straitjacket on me?
yeah, that's, it's a very odd time to be a child who doesn't get shuttled off to Iceland in the Orphan Black universe.
Yeah, very true. Another thing that I loved about the Helena and Allison scene is that when Helena walks down the stairs and is basically dressed like Allison, and you can tell this is totally, like, I think her trying to be Allison in her little So Happy Together dream sequence that they had at the beginning of the season. But it's clear that Helena might be able to pass off as Beth, but I don't think she can pass off as Allison.
No, Allison, I think, might be one of the harder clones to imitate.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Cosima was made it passable last week, I guess, despite saying that she was a lesbian.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Sarah did okay at it, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a particular way she carries herself. She's always the one that I forget is played by the same actress.
Yeah, that's very true. I think in terms of, like, personality, I feel like Allison is... very different, because I feel like, you know, Sarah and Cosima are all sort of like grittier, whereas Allison is much peppier than all of them.
Yeah, she's like the opposite side of the coin.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. So it seems like we're going to have some chaos in the Hendrix household for a while, but Donnie holds his own with Jason, and he has probably the greatest line of the series so far.
I may be a bitch, but I'm Allison's bitch.
Yeah, that, you know, that catapulted him. If he wasn't my favorite before, he definitely is now.
Yes, that'll be one of the keystone quotes of the series.
This is Donnie's I am the one who knocks moment.
right on the same level.
Right on the same level.
But yeah, this was fun. It was fun to see Donnie kind of take a page out of Allison's book, like circa season one, by, you know, grabbing her phone and texting Jason, pretending he was Allison so that he could have him come to Bubbles and confront him about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty fantastic. And I like that. I really love that Donnie knows his place and he's comfortable with his place and he's totally okay with it. And he's like, yeah, sure. You can call me Mr. Chubbs and you know, belittle me all you want, but you know, I'm happy where I am. I love my wife and I love our new business and, you know, go ahead and beat me up, whatever.
Yeah. And I think I agree with you with what you said before, that I think the only loser that came out of this fight was Jason, considering that, I mean, if he's still in it, I think Allison is might want to back out, considering that, like, oh, what I thought was handled is now not, because it turns out he's a little obsessive.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, if you want to get into Allison's good graces, I have a feeling beating the crap out of Donnie is going to push you further away from her and alienate you a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, do you think Donnie actually hits with the girl slap, or do you think he was doing that to kind of play with Jason to get him to punch him?
I don't think he was goading him necessarily, but I think in the moment, like, once he realized he was a little bit outclassed at the fight department, he pretty much figured he'd let it happen, and this is going to drive that wedge between Jason and Allison that needs to happen.
I don't know. Part of me thought Donnie was going to, after what happened with Leaky, he's going to pull like a Neil Patrick Harris and Undercover Brother and just kind of go crazy and like squish his head and kill him.
I would have loved to see that as well. But I think Donnie might also be a little bit gun shy, you know, pun intended.
Yeah. But I feel like if Allison's storylines are about making these sort of big events where things are, you know, where everything ends up splayed out and everyone's in danger at the end of the day, I feel like Donnie accidentally killing Jason would definitely show that, because then they'd have another body to deal with. And also at the same time, now they've lost their supplier and now they might have to deal with other people.
Yeah. Yeah. The suburban body count story is a little bit, but I don't know how many times you can go to that well before it starts to feel really forced.
Yeah. I mean, we've had Ainsley already and we've had Dr. Leaky. So I guess 3 is not a magic number in this case.
Yeah, although something pretty sketchy happens according to the scenes from next episode.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. And so I wonder, do you think that Allison's going to want to back out of the drug organization now?
I think Allison is very committed to making this business work. I think she feels like it might be the one way that they're able to kind of keep afloat without Donnie working wherever he was working.
Do you think Jason's going to want to stay involved?
I think the ideal situation would be if Jason disassociated himself entirely and left them to deal with the Portuguese mob on their own.
Yeah, though you know he's not going to do that because he still thinks that Allison is in love with him.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think he's coming off as more pathetic than Donnie in this instance.
Yeah, very much so. He's totally that jerky guy who, I think it's like the episode of the Brady Bunch when, like, Marsha goes with that guy to the dance and he turns out to be a jerk and she ends up getting with her nerdy friend.
Wow, we're going to some strange pop culture references this episode.
This is a strange episode as it is, so.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we've been to the Brady Bunch before, maybe even this episode, so.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to go back to Helena's canister for a second, because I was reading, there is a great column out there on the internet, which I will put a link to in the comments or in the information, where they talk to a neuroscientist about the actual science behind Orphan Black. And I don't know if you've read this before, Mike, but it's pretty fantastic. They recap each episode. And it was brought up that Cosima's mystery illness, like the prion illnesses, tend to be treatable, like we've seen, by stem cells, but there were two other ways that it was posited that she could be treated if we don't have access to Kira. And one of those is a bone marrow transplant, which you have to imagine she's got some healthy bone marrow contenders out there. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that perhaps the canister babies could contain some material that would be able to be used to treat Cosima.
Oh, that would make sense. I mean, you know, if you don't go the Sarah route, go the Helena route.
Yeah, because I mean, Helena doesn't have it either. You know, she's around.
Yeah, I think that'd be the optimal solution, actually. And again, maybe this is sort of a miscommunication. I actually don't know. I mean, I think Sarah is the only person that Cosima has told outside of this whole dyad inner circle about the fact that she's sick. So all she needs to do is just tell Allison, and then she'll say, oh, yeah, Helena has these eggs. Let's try that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Allison sort of knows because, you know, otherwise, why would Cosima be asking for Allison's pee?
Yeah, I remember that now. I remember
her. I think it is Clone Club business, officially.
Is that first on the docket for the Clone Club meetings?
You know, somebody's dying. That's got to be first on the docket.
You never know. First on the docket might be, so what phone should we get next year?
Yeah. I'm going to make a strong case for the Samsung Galaxy.
As long as it has Skype on it. Lots of Skype this episode.
Yeah, I hope Skype is paying for this.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
You have to imagine it's product placement, because otherwise we'd have like some fake version of Skype.
Yeah, like Flipe.
Yeah.
on their Sony Vaio laptops.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, kudos, product placement all around.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's interesting, and I wonder if it's sort of this is another thing that will be. We only have two episodes left, so it's basically saying, will this be brought up next episode or the episode after that? I'm thinking this is something that will be brought up at the end of the season when they're like, oh, and Cosima, here's this thing that'll make you feel better.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of the 11th hour miracle cure, and I imagine that Helena's going to take some convincing to, you know, sacrifice some of her canister babies.
Yeah, because, I mean, she already has babies. She has her own babies she's incubating, I think.
Well, if you grow up in a convent, you're going to have some very definite views on the sanctity of life.
That's very true. So that could be another Arizona law.
Yeah, yeah, I have a feeling that Helena is going to need some particular convincing to give up some of those canister babies.
Oh, maybe she doesn't need to be asked.
Yeah, maybe she doesn't need to know.
Yeah, and that could, again, set up another fun conflict where, you know, maybe Helena's on the run and she has to grab her babies to find out that they're missing.
Yeah, yeah, let's just open it up, take one or two out. She's not going to miss them. She doesn't know how many are in there.
Yeah, is it true that the babies are going to the House of the Undying?
Where are my babies?
Oh, if only.
Yeah, I have a feeling Helena doesn't need dragons to wreak havoc on the House of the Undying.
No, probably not. She could probably just sneak in there and slit everyone's, that weird bald guy's throat.
Yeah, like she would go in, and she'd be in there for like 30 seconds, and she'd come out covered in blood and holding an axe.
Okay, I did it.
I took care of your weird bald guy.
No, I have my babies. I want to see Helena get in the Game of Thrones universe now.
Yeah, well, she's got the brutality for it.
Actually, Helena kind of is, like, it seems like she's, like, worshipping the many-faced god in a way. I mean, she isn't exactly able to disguise herself, but she kind of has that training of being able to surreptitiously sneak her way into any situation.
Yeah, yeah, and I could see her really enjoying the books because of all the descriptions of food.
Yes, and carnage.
Yeah, food and carnage are Helena's two favorite things.
Tell me more about Frey pies. I want Frey pies, please.
I would like another slice of this pie.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, this is the crossover we all need.
I think so.
Tatiana Maslany's next role.
Game of Thrones.
Cameo on Game of Thrones next season.
Hey, if the girl from Pitch Perfect 2 can make a cameo in Game of Thrones, I think Tatiana Maslany can.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, this is just crossing over. Like, all the streams are getting crossed this year.
Yeah, it's very odd. As someone who covers all this stuff on post-show recaps, it's weird. It's the big crossover episode in my mind that I didn't think would actually come to fruition.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, we'd have a better case for it if Tatiana Maslany had gotten that Star Wars role, because we got Gwendolyn Christie has a Star Wars role. Gwendolyn Christie is in Game of Thrones. Kevin Bacon figures into this somehow.
Yeah, I'm sure. Kevin Bacon probably did movies with Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher or Harrison Ford at some point.
Yeah, it all comes together in a neat little bow.
Absolutely.
So, before, you know, speaking of tying things up in a neat little bow, have we been to all the places we need to go for this recap?
Yeah, I just want to talk a little bit about what did you think about the ultimate scheme that unfurled to get Rachel out of there? Because this is one of those cases, and it was lampooned in an episode of Community about, like, the cross and then the double cross, where, you know, Rachel wants to help him, and then Scott and Del and Cosima and Sarah work to bust her out, but then it turns out that she was working with Dr. Nealon the entire time.
Yeah, they seemed a little quick to trust her. Like, that was Cosima levels of too trusting.
Yeah, even though Sarah was kind of debating it the first half of the episode, you knew she was going to do it eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, I mean, it worked out well the first time she did that. She and Helena are BFFs now.
Yeah, that's true. But how do you think Rachel's breakout compares to Sarah's breakout in the end of season two? I would say a lot less flashy.
Yeah, yeah, much less flashy. And, you know, there were pencils, but nobody used them to stab anybody.
Yeah, and I'm also confused as to how Scott was able to get one of his board game friends to, like, not only get a guard uniform, but also get, like, access. Did he, like, beat up the guard and take his uniform?
Or maybe he is the guard. Like, Scott's got that game in the lab. Everybody in the lab is playing it. I'm sure that guard is really a guard.
So that's the thing, too. Are Scott's board game friends in the lab, or did he invite them over to the lab to play?
I think maybe a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. I think he probably had the conversation with a couple of coworkers, like, oh my God, I'm totally into Agricola. We got to play that again.
Mm-hmm. Which, as a follow-up to last week's podcast, we have discovered through many diligent listeners that it is indeed a game. So we were very mistaken last week when we were talking about the potential of it coming to the market.
Yeah, yeah, it is already on the market, but I'm sure an Orphan Black expansion pack is in the works. In fact, this is how I found out that the podcast had dropped, because it was up for a good, like, 15 minutes, and I got an instant message from my friend Chris. He's like, it's a real board game. It's one of those weird German ones. And it's like, of course it is. Those Germans and their board games.
So this is really how we can communicate how quickly people listen to the podcast, is if we just say something completely erroneous and then wait for it to get corrected.
Yeah, this is a better gauge than hashtags, to be honest.
We've just stumbled upon the greatest discovery ever. We could change the world.
Yeah, this is going to bring about world peace.
Yeah, I think if we're power ranking ideas that will, you know, create world peace, it's got to go this idea, solar power cigarettes, and then making everyone sterile.
Yeah, well, no, it's this idea, solar powered cigarettes, Robert Goulet in pornography, making everyone sterile.
There we go. I think we found the ultimate power ranking for things that will change the world.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have, this is a list that we're going to add to as we get into the rest of the season. But yeah, honestly, I think that Scott has friends in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And they bond over their mutual love of weird, geeky German board games.
I do think, though, that the one who ended up dropping off the copy of the book to Sarah was just Scott's friend. I don't think he was involved in Dyad.
Yeah, that's just Scott's random nerdy friend.
Yeah, which good for him for being able to just... It reminded me a little bit of like when Justin Long and his friends helped save the ship at the end of Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell like this is like a dream come true for them to be able to participate as like spies.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I get to do a spy thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know how much more potential they'll get out of that considering that Rachel is now gone in more ways than one. So their dreams are short-lived.
Yeah, yeah, and Caster's got one of the books, and Delphine's got the other copy, and she's not giving it up. But I would imagine, you've seen Rachel decode, like, several pages by this point. You should be able to crack the code based on that. Like, she's drawing lines over it, and I think it's got something to do with, like, certain letters are circled, and then certain symbols are written there, and you gotta, like, draw the symbol over the letters.
Yeah, it basically becomes, like, connect the dots once you know the cipher.
Yeah, I mean, in the movie Contact, they have, like, one little thing with, like, there's two dots and then three dots, and all of a sudden they were able to unlock these plans to build this giant thing. So I'm going to guess that you've got enough material at this point that if you had a copy of the book, you could figure it out.
Yeah, Robert Langdon doesn't need to... You don't need Robert Langdon to solve this codex.
Yeah, well, you don't generally need Robert Langdon to solve this codex because... You know, his great discovery is, oh, you hold this text up to a mirror and you can read it suddenly.
Yeah, especially not with that hair.
Yeah, especially not. So, yeah, I think they're closer than they think, and I think they have more clues than they think they do.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, they really glossed over that serial number. So I wonder if that's something they're going to realize once they get to London next week.
Yeah, and I hope they at least run this stuff by Cosima before they pack their bags.
Hey, just so you know, hopefully they're not going to Skype, and they'll be Cosima and be like, where are you guys?
Yeah, and they'd be like, well, where are you? You've been at this strange lady's house, and you don't even know if she's a spy. So yeah. Pot and kettle, yo.
Exactly. Do not cast the first stone here, Cosima.
Yeah, yeah. If she just, like, stopped falling in love with everybody, we'd have way fewer problems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So... Yeah, I'm thinking next week in London, we're going to hopefully get a few answers. And this is a show that doles out answers pretty regularly, so I'm optimistic.
Yeah, and I mean, we only have two episodes left. So I think we'll probably speak more about the season as a whole once we get to the last episode. But I'll say that I think like since like episode six, really the latter half of this season has been like cranking out really top-notch, high-paced episodes. And I can only imagine it will increase more as they go to London.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is, you know, this is the spectacular field trip episode. I don't have any doubt that it's going to be amazing.
I knew I should have stayed home today.
Yeah.
The Magic School Bus reference.
Yeah, this is how we can tell that I'm a few years older than Mike.
Yes, voiced by Danny Tamborelli, who voiced younger Pete on The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Oh, that's a reference I get.
There you go. So that's the big connector. That's the Kevin Bacon of it all.
Bridging the Gap.
Mm-hmm.
Is Little Pete. So, Mike Bloom, do we have a hashtag for this episode that people can tweet out if they've gotten through all of our dense deconstructions of Robert Goulet pornography and saving the world through solar power cigarettes?
Well, I think there's got to be something around that Goulet pornography, but I'm trying to come up with something that's like a clean hashtag that we can use.
Yeah, because I found out pretty quickly that if I put porn in the hashtag, people get upset.
Yeah, so we won't do that. We could do like, if this functioned as a way for Orphan Black to get made, can we do like hashtag Goulet Kickstarter?
Okay, Goulet Kickstarter I think is good. That's G-O-U-L-E-T, guys. Goulet Kickstarter is our hashtag for this episode.
And I can imagine that there are not many times when that was used beforehand, so I think we're good on terms of the originality of it.
I don't even think we need to check that.
No, I'm assuming not.
All right, so Mike, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. And as for stuff that's going on here on Post Show Recaps, it's very nebulous at the moment. Antonio Mazzaro and I are going to try to get together and recap Community the next few days. And if you missed it last week, we did a big retrospective on The Wire, which just got released on Blu-ray with myself, Antonio, and the great Colin Stone. It was a really, really in-depth, really cool podcast. So I definitely give that a listen if you are a fan. And if you're a fan of reality TV as well, go over to the Rob Has a Podcast main feed. Last week, I got together with Rob Cesternino and Big Brother players Ian Terry and Spencer Clawson, and we got to dissect a bunch of twists that listeners submitted and saw if they were viable or not. Jess, I hear you've got a new show coming up, don't you?
That's correct, Mike. Next weekend, Orange is the New Black Season 3 drops, and I'm all about the Season 3 shows that start with O and end with black, because
that's a very, very niched interest.
Hey, it's serving me very, very well. The great Taylor Cotter and I will be covering that for you on post-show recaps. We're going to be dropping an episode of that. We're going to record a bunch and put them in the can, and then we're going to drop them every few days for you guys. And also, Rob Cesternino and I recorded a very cracked-out Amazing Race Game of Thrones crossover that is coming out probably sometime this week, that you guys, if you watch either show, I think it will be entertaining for you. And I think that's all that I've been doing. Oh, if you are a Game of Thrones book reader, Antonio Mazzaro and I recorded the Game of Thrones book club this past week,
which was great. Really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And now I actually have a few days where I don't have any podcasts to record, and it's...
Don't jinx yourself. Now there are going to be people saying, hey, record a podcast about casting Star Wars universe with only Tatiana Maslany.
Yeah, well, that'd be a quick podcast.
You never know. Could it be like Helena would be a good Han Solo?
Yeah, I like Helena as... I think Helena is a Sith Lord, personally, but... You know, we don't have to quibble about that. We don't have to go there right now. Save that for the off season. Yeah, I've had a couple of weeks where I've been like, oh, yay, I don't have to record any podcasts for 5 days. Oh, except for this one. And oh, right, I forgot about that other one. Oh, okay, yeah, I got a few podcasts to record. Never mind.
I've definitely felt the same things, but it's a labor of love. So these are good problems to have.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if my biggest problem in life is I have too many podcasts, I must have a pretty great life.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so everybody, thank you for bearing with us on this weird and wonderful journey through episode 8 of Orphan Black, and we will see you guys same time and place next week. Bye-bye.